Welcome to Eat, Capture, Share, the podcast for food bloggers, food lovers, and everyone in between. My name is Kimberly. I'm your host. Episode 72. Welcome back, everybody, to the Eat, Capture, Share podcast. My name is Kimberly Espinel. I'm a food photographer, food photography teacher. I'm, of course, the podcaster here at Eat, Capture, Share, and I'm also the author of the Amazon best-selling book, Creative Food Photography. This month marks 3 years, pretty much exactly, since I released the very first podcast episode, and you're welcome to listen to the first episode. It's not very good. And I can tell you, it took me like 7 hours to record because I didn't know anything about, you know, how it all works, the editing process. And I'm really delighted to say that I feel and I hope I've become a better podcaster. And I also understand the back end side much, much better and the editing process. But what has transpired for me in the last 3 years is that the podcast is definitely one of the things I do that I enjoy the most. And the podcast is definitely one of the things I do that has, I believe, the most impact out of all the mediums that I share my work in. And if you're on the mailing list, you know I've been doing a lot of soul searching in terms of where The Little Plantation and Eat, Capture, Share are moving in this last quarter of the year, and most certainly in 2022. And what's become really obvious to me is how much I love this podcast and how much you enjoy it and how neglected this podcast has been over the last 3 years. So, you know, I've only released, this is episode 72, so I've only released 72 episodes in 3 years. And I keep wondering what would happen if I released episodes more regularly. So it is something that I will be working towards in 2022. I cannot imagine, I can't quite envisage releasing a weekly podcast, but let's see how we go, but at least something a little bit more consistent. So maybe 12 episodes per season, 3 seasons a year with a little break, but something a little bit more consistent so you know when they're coming and I can plan and prep accordingly. What has held me back in part is producing the podcast is also one of the most expensive things I do. So I have a podcast editor, and then Christina, who's on my team, she reaches out to the guests and she books them in and she does all the show notes. And so, you know, there's a big cost involved, and I'm really, really committed to keeping this podcast ad-free and also to continue to provide it as a free resource. And in order to do that, your support would be so, so, so deeply appreciated. And in fact, I will say this, not just for me, but also for all the other content creators whose content you love and you consume regularly. So that could be YouTubers who create incredible weekly content that you're learning from, or, you know, bloggers whose recipes you make again and again and again. There are different ways that you can support the podcast, and lots of them are free. One of them is to tell your friends, your neighbors, to reshare any of the episodes you love on Instagram or Instagram stories. So, so many of you have been doing that, and I am so grateful. I always try and repost, but Instagram's quite mean. Every time I repost something, they kind of, you know, the algorithm doesn't really like it so much. So I try and stagger it. Another way is to leave a review. I always say this, the number of reviews I have for this podcast compared to how many people actually listen to it, it's like 1%. So if you could leave a review, it would really help so much. And then of course, if you have the financial means and you're super duper into food photography, getting my book, Creative Food Photography, is another way of supporting this podcast, supporting my work. And, you know, to go back to all the other creatives, you know, please think about ways that you can continue to support them, because I know how much work goes into every piece of content they create just for you. Now, all of that to say, I'm super duper committed to bringing you more and better podcast episodes as we move into 2022. And in order to do that, it would be so helpful too for me to know what you want to hear more about. I have noticed that my solo teaching episodes are amongst your favorites. I just need to know what you want me to teach on so I can be sure to do that. And also, there's certainly lots of episodes where I invite guests onto the show that you love. If there is a guest I haven't invited yet that you're dying to hear from, do let me know. You know, I'll super happy to reach out to them and see if we can make it happen. Right, shall we chat about today's podcast episode? I have to say, this guest to me is really, really special. And that's also the good thing about having a podcast. It's like a sneaky way to fangirl on somebody and then cash, have them chat with you for an hour long and just connect with you. And then for that hour, you kind of feel you're their best friend. But anyways, Kara, who is today's podcast guest, is one of those people I've been fangirling on for the longest time. Kara and her partner run Chickpea Magazine, which, if you're not familiar with it, first of all, you're missing out. But secondly, it's an indie magazine that's been going for about 10 years. It is a vegan lifestyle magazine, but I don't think you need to be vegan to enjoy its content. Chickpea Magazine is one of those magazines that when I get a copy, there's no way I want to write in it or mark pages or, you know, dare I say it, throw it out. Like, none of those things. It's really one of those magazines that you keep forever. And Kara, who essentially produces the magazine from start to finish, has just such a beautiful way of editing her images, of shooting her images, of creating her shots. I just find it so inspiring. I find her Instagram super duper inspiring. And I really wanted to sit down and chat with her to get a better sense of how you can stay creative for so long. She's been in this game for 10 years plus and still be inspiring and inspired. I also wanted to dig deeper and get a sense of what's actually involved in creating a magazine, how to be featured in a beautiful magazine like Chickpea, and lots more. This is an episode really focusing less on the business side of things like I have been recently, but more on deep nourishing creativity. And yes, I really hope you enjoy the episode. I hope if you like the sound of her, and if after scrolling her Instagram, you're like, dang, I need a copy of Chickpea on my kitchen counter or my coffee table, then I'll be sure to link to her and all her resources in the show notes and other bits and pieces there at the end. I'll mention it at the end of the episode too. But without further ado, let me introduce you to Kara.
I'm honestly just so excited to have you here. And I think for me, the best thing about doing the podcast is that I get to speak to creatives whose work I admire or who just, you know, bring me joy. So the podcast is kind of a little bit of like a passion project in that sense. And you're most certainly one of those people whose work I'm in awe of and inspired by and just so excited for our chat today. Just wanted to say that, you know, to start with. But I know that there are people tuning in who may not know you, who may not have come across your beautiful work. So please do introduce yourself.
Thank you, first of all. Since it's a podcast, you can't see it, but that made me very happy. Thank you. So my name's Kara, and I've been shooting food for 10 or 11 years now. And I started my independent food magazine. It's called Chickpea. We started it in 2010, and it's been in print and digital, but mostly in print all around the world, in stores and in people's houses. I do a mix of magazine work and freelance food photography. So I have kind of a wide variety of things that I'm doing.
Amazing. So truly like a multi-passionate creative.
Yeah.
Amazing. Now, I know a lot of people dream of creating a book or creating a magazine or, you know, doing something where their work or their work of their fellow creatives is in print. And so I would love to know, like, how did Chickpea come about? Did you just wake up one day and was like, I'm going to start a magazine? Or like, how did that go?
It's funny because I remember I deleted my original Twitter account, so I can't find this, but I remember tweeting out, like, on my private Twitter account, like, in 2010, I was like, I wonder what it takes to start like a high-end magazine, because I was it was at the beginning of like this resurgence of like new magazines. So like Kinfolk had just come out with their first issue, and I went into Anthropology and it was like rows of these incredible high quality magazines. And I didn't even think that was a possibility. Mm-hmm. So I grew up with magazines. We didn't really have any books in the house, but we did have these cheap like newsstand magazines growing up. And I loved them for their like mix of different information, and that they were kind of on trend. I mean, they're definitely on trend, but I hated everything else about it. I hated the like body shaming, the push to buy things as like a solution to your problems. I really didn't like that idea, but I liked the format so much that after I got out of college, I was extremely burnt out on creative work. So I got into cooking instead, because I went to art school, very different to be cooking. So I was learning how to cook. I started photographing what I was cooking. Being newly vegan, I wanted to like kind of make it a whole thing to really dive into it. So I took my photography skills from art school and applied it and started this little blog. It was on Tumblr years ago, called Hipster Food. And it got really big really fast. It got featured regularly on Tumblr and on lots of different websites. And I think within the first year we had 30,000 followers.
Oh my God.
At the time that was like a huge deal.
Yes.
And by that time I was posting probably 3 times a day, something like that.
Oh my God.
I was super burnt out, and I was really burnt out on like the constant like negative comments. I mean, we were a vegan blog on the front page of Tumblr in 2010, which was very like peak epic bacon time. Mm. So we got lots of troll comments and messages and stuff. And I was just a little bit sick of the like fast pace and the public nature of blogging. And I wanted to make something a little more substantial than what we were doing. And so with this like community of 30,000 followers at the time, I was like, this is the perfect timing to do all of the, all of these things happened at the same time. Like seeing this like resurgence of beautiful magazines and wanting to get out of blogging, it was just like the perfect timing. So we started a Kickstarter, and that was where we started, basically.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. Kara, there's like so much to unpick here.
Yes.
I actually don't even know. So I'm going to take it back a little bit, because the first thing you said, which I just think is so interesting, is that how you loved and enjoyed magazines. Mm-hmm. And as you were saying that, I had this kind of throwback, kind of flashback thing of just being lying on my bed as a teenager and flicking through magazines. Mm-hmm. 100 times the same magazine, and then ripping stuff out and then doing like a little scrapbook thing.
Oh yeah. Same experience.
It's like, wait a minute. I think I'm talking to a kindred soul.
Yeah.
And I kind of wonder if you can articulate for you, you know, what especially did you like about that magazine format? Because I love magazines. I love magazines. I don't buy them so much anymore because I feel a little bit guilty about it. And B, just as you said, like my mom used to get Vogue sometimes, and I just thought, you know, now retrospectively, I can realize I just thought the photography was just so amazing and just, you know, everything. But even then I noticed that I would say about 80% of the magazine was ads. But I would love to know from you, if you can articulate what about that format, that medium of magazines really kind of pulled you in.
I think what you mentioned is a huge reason I loved them, which was that really visual element. Magazines aren't really like books in that they're mostly visual with a little bit of text. And so I really liked that mixture of visual elements. So it's photography and design and text all put together in one space. Mm-hmm. And I also love, it's kind of like an entry level to readings about something. So like a whole book is kind of daunting, especially I'm a very slow reader, even at that age. Mm-hmm. I was reading a lot more back then, actual books, but now it's like, I'm such a slow reader. It's hard for me to get through a whole book, but a magazine if it's done well, is a great way to get into an idea or a concept. It's kind of like the difference between a movie or a TV show, or like a short, or like a whole Game of Thrones 12 season show. Yeah. It's just a little bit easier to get into it. That's why I really like it, besides all the content, which I don't like.
And then the second thing you said that I'd love to know a little bit more about is that you got featured by Tumblr. You had 30,000 subscribers really quickly. And even if we equate that to 30,000, you know, blog hits, it doesn't actually quite capture what that meant at the time. Mm-hmm. So I think it would have been much more than that. But, you know, if you had to distill down what it was about your writing, your photography, both, or what was it that you feel in retrospect brought all those people to you, to your blog? Why did Tumblr feature you? You know, anybody tuning in who's eager to get noticed, to stand out, anything that you learned through that process?
Yeah, so there are so many things that went into it. And it's something I think about all the time, because it's like a good thing to apply to any new thing that you're doing, really. And that was, the first thing was, I was tailoring it specifically to that platform. So like, I knew Tumblr really well because I was already on it. It's not really a thing anymore, but at the time I was on it every day. Yeah. So I knew the tone of voice that people really connected with and the type of photos that got shared a lot. And not only that, but at the time there were like specific formats that did really well. So like back in 2010, there was like fans got, or like people on Tumblr voted for their top blogs in each category. And so it was like my main goal to become like in the top 10 of all food blogs on Tumblr. So the first thing is knowing that format. That's super important and helpful. And that's through examining other people's work and your own. Mm-hmm. And then the next was, I was just working all the time, which I don't recommend now. But I do think that if you're just starting out, putting a lot of effort into it is kind of crucial. So Tumblr back then was kind of like Instagram kind of now, where it's kind of like a little short story in the caption, and it's not too much effort. I mean, unless you really want to put the effort in. But so I was posting at least three of those a day, like for the first like 6 to 9 months, something like that. And on top of that, I was also submitting these posts to like Food Gawker. These were like websites in the past
where
you could get featured. Yeah. And it would bring traffic to your site as well. But that's just about knowing like where to look to find these places to be featured, or I don't know, constantly putting yourself out there. That really, I think, is what did it. And the idea that we had really like branded ourselves at the time. We were like one of the few people who were really like going in on a specific niche aesthetic, not just doing a regular food blog. And I think that was a big thing that set us apart.
You said, again, there's two things here. So one is you are saying we. So I think, and I know from having received your magazine and following you sometime, that it's you and I think your partner who do this together.
Yes. So especially at the beginning, we would do all the recipes together. Really now it's just me, but he does all the customer service for the magazine and he helps me do the shipping. But when you're starting out by yourself, it makes you seem more legit to say we. Like for me, it made me feel like I wasn't just making everything up. Like it felt like it's legitimizing myself to say we. That's basically what the magazine is. It's like, besides our contributors who are amazing, I'm doing everything myself. So like a lot of the writing, all the editing, design. So it's, I don't know, to say we, it makes it feel more legit than me saying I do everything myself.
I love that. I love that. And you also mentioned doing a Kickstarter, and it's really funny because I was speaking to somebody the other week, and she wanted to do a Kickstarter to start her book, but it's essentially the same thing. So for people who are listening who don't know about Kickstarter, if you can explain a little bit more about what it was. But then I'm also curious to know why you chose Kickstarter. And again, any tips or advice that you could share with us for anybody who's listening is like, oh wow, I'd love to explore that, and please do share your experience.
Sorry to be interrupting your podcast experience, but did you know that my book, Creative Food Photography, is now available? Full of inspiring content, ideas for finding your style, up-leveling your food styling, and taking your composition to the next level. You can find out more at thelittleplantation.co.uk/food-photography-book, or find the link to all you need in the show notes. Thank you so much for your support. And now, back to the podcast.
Yeah, so we chose Kickstarter because it was one of the few, if basically the only thing at the time that was very legit in terms of crowdfunding. So Kickstarter is a place to kind of put a product or something out there that other people can invest in. And then once it's achieved the amount that you set aside, then you create the thing and deliver it. For me, my approach with the Kickstarter, because I knew that it wouldn't get produced until we got the minimum number, I did the bare minimum number that we needed to create anything. Mm-hmm. So basically, we weren't like great at this at the time. It took us a long time to actually figure these things out. But a great thing to go into when you're doing these, like crowdfunding or any kind of release, is first, we had an audience that we knew like was invested in us. That was a huge thing right off the bat. If it was just us going in without having any work to show behind the scenes, I don't know if people would invest in it. So we already had that 30,000 or 40,000 going into it. And then we knew, okay, here's a few quotes from printers and here's our idea of what the shipping will cost. Mm-hmm. And so we basically went for a number that was like a couple hundred issues to make sure that we could do that at least. And we did like a cost analysis of what it would cost per issue. It still wasn't perfect. So like every international subscriber that decided to invest in the Kickstarter, I think we ended up spending like $5 to $10 per person. Like it was because shipping was kind of a big surprise. But nowadays it's much easier to figure out the money side of it and like do some estimates beforehand. And now like there's groups and books and all these things about creating an indie magazine that make it a lot easier. When we were starting, there was nothing. So we were figuring it out on our own.
Yeah, amazing. That's so cool.
Yeah.
Now, I'd love to know, you know, you said that from the outset, you had actually a really good sense of how you needed to niche down, you know, on a particular topic and what you wanted the brand to feel like and look like. And, you know, I've been in the blogging space now for over 7 years, and over that time I've seen indie magazines come and go. Mm-hmm. And of course, I don't know the why behind it, but I wonder if that piece, that considered piece, was missing, you know, the thinking about where do we sit, where do we, you know, what niche do we fill, what, who's audience. Where did you get that knowledge from? Like, how did you know that? Is that from art school? Is that innate in you? Or is that something that you developed?
I think it's something that I've developed in myself since I was like a teenager or something, knowing pretty much what I want to do and having that inside of me. And I know not everyone has that, so it's kind of like not great advice, but but like a thing that I think really helped us with ours specifically and finding our niche was that we have these like ethics or ideals innate in what we're doing. And that helps us right off the bat. So like we knew we wanted it to be ad-free. We knew we wanted it to be like anti-celebrity and like anti-consumption kind of content. And it needed to be vegan. And so like right off the bat, we niche ourselves down quite a bit. And also those ideals are the things that helped us keep going even when everything was very, very difficult. Because we knew we had this like higher idea of what we wanted to do. Like even when it wasn't making money, it was like, okay, at least we're putting out into the world something incredible. And that's why I started freelancing to like make up for that. But those ideals really helped us figure out that niche. And on top of that, I've always had this, I don't want to say like aesthetic, but I have certain things that like I'm drawn to, and I'm sure every photographer pretty much does. Or if you don't, it's not that difficult to get and find inspiration around you. But I've always had this certain aesthetic going into it that really helped set us apart. But that came from like from me being a teenager until I went to college and then going to art school and like really refining like all of what I'm doing. It just takes time to figure out what your style is. And once you do find that style, it's much easier to set yourself apart.
Mm. It sounds to me like you've really been tuning into your creative spirit.
Yeah.
From a very early age and just, you know, and I do think like I can see a chickpea image or your image and I'll know instantly that it's you. I do think there's just something a little bit nostalgic about your photos and very warm colors and a little bit kind of vintagey, almost like a hint of 1970s in there. And so yeah, approachable and just, yeah, just very, I don't know. That's the best way I can describe it.
I love how it's taken, we've been around for 10 years now, mm-hmm. and I love that it's taken us that long. Our new issue, the theme is vintage. And I was like, this is what it's all led to, because yeah. That's really like what the kind of look is. But yeah, like I grew up wanting to be an artist since I was like 10, and not just like in the way that kids want to be something when they grow up, but it was the only thing that I was really consumed by. Wow. And so it was interesting trying to start a business when I'm coming from like an art background. Like I want to make something because it's beautiful or it's got like some concept to it. Not necessarily that it makes money, but mm-hmm. like by starting this, it puts me in that mindset of like, okay, how can we also make money, but also mm-hmm. do all the other things that we want to do?
Yeah. I would love to know now that you're 10 years into this journey, how do you stay inspired? How do you stay thirsty for, you know, honing your craft, creating this work? Because with all the romance of creating a beautiful magazine, I know there's a heck of a lot of hard work behind the scenes. How do you still make it a fulfilling thing?
I think the thing that really helps me is that, like I mentioned, those ideals or those things that I want to see in the world happen, that really pushes me. Like right now we're doing an issue release, so it's really easy to like be excited about it. But 6 months into it, when I'm not doing as much of the creative work, which is really the thing that like lights me up, and we're just shipping orders and dealing with stores, basically, the thing that helps me keep going is I will get out a few magazines from the library or the store nearby mm-hmm. and flipping through those and not seeing what I want to see in the world, which is this like positive, helpful content that inspires people. When I don't see that, I'm like, okay, I'm doing the right thing mm-hmm. by trying to create this thing for the world. And by the world, I mean basically our subscribers. We're not that big.
I love how there is a bigger purpose, a bigger why behind the production of the magazine. And it sounds to me, if I understand you correctly, that it's that bigger purpose that pulls you through even through the tedious tasks that are involved in creating your magazine. Now, I don't know exactly, because of course I'm not in the magazine industry, but from where I'm standing, it feels as though there's been like a period where print magazines have really struggled. Like I'm just thinking here, if I'm not mistaken, like Jamie Oliver's magazine folded, mm-hmm. quite a few big name magazines folded because so many people are consuming magazine-like content online. Mm-hmm. And so I'd love to know, where do you see the future of magazines going? Do you think the magazine industry is dead? What do you think is happening? And then also, if it is, then why do magazines keep popping up? I'd love your thoughts on that.
Yeah, so I think that a lot of magazines fold because they're so large and in some ways not sustainable in the way that like the market changes. Not that I really know what the market is, but like when things change, when Instagram becomes the new blogging and blogging goes away because, things are always changing. And these big mainstream magazines, I think they go out because they rely on hundreds of thousands of subscribers and stores to be successful. I think we've kind of gone under the radar in that regard, because I guess it's kind of like the dinosaurs dying out and there's like little mammals still hidden in the hidden in the caves kind of thing.
Yeah.
Where we're a little more agile and we can respond quicker than like these magazines that have really long production times, because we're making ours twice a year and basically I'm doing it in like a few months before we release it. So it's really, it is pretty timely. But I think that's probably why the bigger mainstream magazines are maybe not doing as well. And I think that really the future of magazines is just like the future of any medium that could be going away, like newspapers. That's probably the prime example. But it's like saying that like movies are going to die because TikTok is here. I just think like they're totally different mediums. And really what you have to do is create something that is different from what is happening. So like movies are not TikTok. Magazines are not Instagram. So what I'm trying to do always is create something that's outside of what Instagram is, or like what online is, where if it's like a beautiful cookbook or a beautiful magazine, it's like, how is that different from the experience of being on Instagram? The Instagram experience is very fast paced. It's looking at a lot of similar images over and over again because of the algorithm. It's like little snippets of information that don't really connect together. Mm. So like if I'm looking at like your photography book, it's like, does it have beautiful embossing on the cover or beautiful thick matte pages? Sitting down to that with like a cup of coffee and a candle lit, I think is a much better experience than Instagram, my opinion. But like, that's where I see, like, I'm not like down on the future of anything that I'm doing, because it's like, I don't really see Instagram as like my competition. It's really like, I want to step out of that like fast-paced stream of what social media is. And I think that's where other people could be successful.
I know that there's listeners tuning into this episode, you're like, oh my God, Kara's magazine sounds amazing. I'd love to contribute. I'd love to be a part of it. Can you talk through how to contribute and also what you're looking for? Like when you, I'm sure you get lots of people pitching and that kind of thing. What are you looking for? Like kind of two or three pointers that you can let us know about.
Yeah. So I love that a big part of what we're doing is featuring like other creators. Like when we first started, the idea of doing that was because I felt like we were blowing up really big, but then there were creators who I thought were better than us, not getting as much attention, just like that's the way of the internet. So we have like an open submission form for the magazine all year round, and basically you just send in your ideas, and then like if it fits one of our next couple of issues, then I just contact the person back, and it's pretty easy to work with. Like I'm very open to the idea of like just hearing other people's stories. Like I don't really give too much direction, but it's pretty easy to actually contribute. It's just on our website.
Okay, great. What I'll do is I'll put a link to that in the show notes for anybody who's interested and intrigued. Just another kind of technical question before we start bringing the episode to a close. But if you had, I have no concept, actually. I have no idea what all is involved in creating a magazine, but if you had to boil down 2, 3, 4 skills that you have that you think is vital to running the magazine, anything that came as a surprise to you that you had to cultivate and build up. You talked about the kind of business side and liaising with printers. So I'd love to know, you know, what is involved and what key skills are required to make a magazine.
Well, there's so many. I think the biggest ones that I guess aren't like, maybe they're not hard skills, but the biggest ones I think are organization and, well, I guess writing is a skill. Basically, organization and the ability to be able to edit and write really well. And probably also curation is a huge part of it. You have to have the ability to like self-criticize and create a mixture of things very easily. Those are probably the biggest things that you would need, like just as a general concept. And then also probably a big thing for creating or running a magazine, like at least like ours, is the ability to be constantly learning. So like I've got a whole list of projects that I have in my organizational software, and it's got things about running a mailing list and things about learning InDesign. And there's lots of different little pieces and some hard skills in there too, that you have to be able to research on your own and not just read a book about it. Because as much as there is some information out there now, a lot of it is just like, you have to figure it out for yourself and for what you're looking to do.
Oh, gotcha. Amazing. Well, I have to say, I think your magazine, I'm just going to say, in case someone's like, what, did they even say the name of the magazine? We did.
Oh, yeah.
Let me say it again. Chickpea Magazine. I love it. I think it's so beautiful. And you're right, it's a gift to the world, because there's nothing like it out there. And just so, so glad that you are creating it and you're building this gorgeous legacy imprint for us and for many generations to come, because it's the kind of magazine that you just wouldn't throw away after reading it. It's definitely something for keeping. So I just want to thank you for that.
Yeah.
Well, Kara, before we bring the podcast episode to a close, you're a listener, I think, so you will know I always end the podcast by asking my guests what their most favorite thing to eat, what their most favorite thing to capture, and what their most favorite thing to share.
Okay. My favorite thing to eat probably is cinnamon rolls. It's
nice.
One of my favorite things to make, too. My favorite thing to capture, I love shooting drinks, cocktails, especially bubbly, icy drinks. That's my favorite thing to shoot.
Well, that's so cool and very unexpected. I had not expected you to say that.
It's a big challenge, which is part of the reason I like it. And I guess something I want to share, because I talked a little bit about it before, it's about like feeling like an imposter. I've just been thinking about it a lot lately. And my favorite thing to get over, like that fear of like you're not good enough or something, even though you are, is to stop thinking about yourself and think about how you can help the other person that you're working with. That really helps me. And it's something I want to share because it helps me a lot.
Amazing. Thank you so, so much, Kara. Now, if people are tuning into this and they want to discover your magazine, your Instagram, where can they?
So you can find the magazine on our website. So it's just chickpeamagazine.com. And you can find us on Instagram at chickpea_mag pretty easily.
Amazing. I'll link to both those in the show notes. And just want to say thank you. I really enjoyed our conversation.
Yeah, thank you so much.
If you are curious to find out more about Kara and Chickpea Magazine, be sure to head to the show notes where I will link to all the resources, all the things that I mentioned, including Kara's Instagram, website, etc., etc. I also just wanted to point out that for this whole entire season, my mic was not connected to the recording system on Zoom. I use Zoom to record my podcast. And that is because my son keeps using my computer for Zoom meetings, for school meetings, for his Dungeons and Dragons meetings. So apologies that the sound has been atrocious. My end. Going forward, that has been fixed for good. Anyways, I will be back, all being well, same time, same place next week with another interview-based podcast. Remember to leave a rating and review if you can. Get my book if you haven't got it just yet. And also do DM me on Instagram or send me an email at kimberly@thelittleplantation.co.uk with ideas, questions, anything that you would like me to answer or address in the podcast. I would love to hear from you. Right? I'm going to love and leave you, and I will be back next week. See you then. Before I leave you, I wanted to say thank you so, so much for tuning in. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. I also wanted to let you know that this podcast was brought to you by my Eat, Capture, Share newsletter community, and I'd love for you to join. I will pop the details on how you can join my creative community in the show notes, so do go and check it out. Also, if you enjoy the podcast, it means so much if you can rate, review, and subscribe. All those things will help the podcast to grow and to reach the right audience. And yeah, you'd kind of make my day. All right, see you soon. Take care.